This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The worst case scenario is that we have these security blind spots where the epidemic could take hold and we don't know about.
That's WHO spokesman Tariq Jassarovich on the difficulties in assessing the latest Ebola outbreak because of the conflict area. Details next. Also, in Uganda, politicians and human rights advocates are condemning the treason charges against legislators. And the delay in learning the final outcome of Zimbabwe's recent election is affecting businesses. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. The World Health Organization says security issues could hamper efforts to contain an Ebola outbreak in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The outbreak is in conflict-ridden North Kivu province, where some areas are too dangerous for healthcare workers to go. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
As of Wednesday, about 2 weeks after the Ebola outbreak was declared in North Kivu province, there were 78 confirmed and probable cases of the viral disease, including 44 deaths. That is nearly double the number of cases reported during a recent and separate Ebola outbreak in Equateur province. Health workers have fanned out in North Kivu, tracking down contacts of Ebola victims and giving them an experimental vaccine. But WHO spokesman Tariq Jassarovich says more cases of Ebola are expected to be seen in the coming days and weeks.
It will get worse before it gets better. We don't know if we are having all transmission chains identified. We expect to see more cases as a result of earlier infections, and these infections are developing into illness.
He tells VOA that health workers are able to move around freely in the towns of Mangina and Beni, which are the epicenters of the disease. It is the other parts of the province that have the WHO worried.
There are areas just next to Mangina that are level 4 on the UNDSS security scale, which means that it's an area not to go to. The worst case scenario is that we have this security blind spots where the epidemic could take hold and we don't know about.
The WHO reports it is using the same Ebola vaccine that helped contain the outbreak in Equateur province. So far, it says, nearly 500 people in North Kivu have been vaccinated, including healthcare workers and people who have come in contact with confirmed cases of the deadly disease. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Uganda, politicians and human rights advocates are condemning treason charges against legislators and the detention of another in a military facility. Five legislators were arrested on Monday for allegedly stoning the president's motorcade. Critics from both the ruling party and the opposition want the government to explain the reason for the charges and for alleged torture of those arrested. They have also called upon Ugandans to rise up and defend the Constitution and their civil rights. VOA's Catherine Nambi files this report from Kampala.
Yesterday, more than 30 people were charged with treason at the Chief Magistrate's Court in Gulu District. Among them are four legislators, Gerard Karuhanga, Paul Mwiru, Kassiano Wadri, and Michael Mabike. However, renowned musician turned legislator Robert Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine, was charged separately with illegal possession of firearms before the general court-martial and remanded at Makindye military barracks. They were arrested on Monday by Special Forces Command soldiers. All of those arrested are reported to have obstructed President Museveni's convoy by pelting it with stones as he returned from a campaign rally. But the arrests subsequent detention, and alleged torture of the parliamentarians have not gone down well with a cross-section of politicians and human rights defenders. Monica Amoding is a Ugandan legislator.
This must stop. We want to denounce this and also say that these are trumped-up charges. I believe that no Ugandan, particularly members of parliament, can commit such a crime of throwing a stone to the presidential convoy.
Another legislator, Sam Yomoki, scoffs at what he calls fabricated charges by Museveni.
The president must be able to understand and to see that we are not idiots, because, you know, he might be thinking that what he's doing, trying to parade members of parliament as criminal, that Ugandans are buying that falsehood. No one is buying that falsehood. And for me, I want to assure you that this Arua is a signal, a sign that the time has come to start counting the winding up of our father.
Betty Aol Ochan is the leader of opposition in parliament. She has called for the unconditional release of the legislators. Aol has called on the public to rise up and protest their continued detention.
We call upon all peace and democracy-loving Ugandans and all other stakeholders, human rights defenders, and the international community to take keen interest to what is happening in this country and join with us to demand for fairness and good governance.
A long-time rival of Museveni, four-time presidential contender Dr. Kizza Besigye, dismisses the decision by government to arraign legislators before military courts.
No civilian person should be charged and attempted to be tried in the military courts. Military courts are courts of service discipline of servicemen. They are part and parcel of the hierarchy of the military service. These courts are not only formed by Mr. Museveni, of course, but these ones are subordinate to the commander-in-chief. They take orders. They have no protection of independence. There is no protection of independence in the military court. Even if the charges were that they had guns illegally, those cases are triable also in the civil courts.
Lawyers have petitioned the Uganda Human Rights Commission, challenging the detention of the legislators and others on the same charges. Ladislas Rakafuzi is a human rights advocate.
We think that the acts of the state are arbitrary, a total violation of the rule of law, and a violation of fundamental human rights. People have been tortured. We have come to the commission here to urge for answers from the state, because this is the bridge. The commission is the bridge by which we, the common people, have to reach the state. We hope the commission has answers.
General J.J. Odong is Uganda's Minister for Internal Affairs. He insists that government will continue to crack down on illegal processions.
Impunity of whatever kind or amount shall not be tolerated. It is noteworthy that processions have resulted in clashes and violence. It is therefore our considered opinion and advice that these processions should be discouraged.
Police have for the second day been engaging in running battles with youths in the Kampala suburb of Kamocha, the home to legislator Robert Kyagulanyi. The European Union and the U.S. Embassy in Kampala have released statements condemning the detention. According to a U.S. Embassy statement, all of those detained have the right to humane treatment, due process, access to lawyers and to their families, and a prompt, fair, and transparent trial. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
This week, Mali elected President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita for a second term. He won 67% of the votes against competitor Soumaïla Cissé, who garnered nearly 33%. The elections took place amid efforts by the government and international forces to stabilize and rebuild the country, which has been battling terrorists and inter-community violence for several years. From Washington, reporter William Eagle takes a look at some of the issues facing the government.
Mali has a full plate of issues to contend with, from the economy to reconciliation and social justice. A peace agreement signed 3 years ago brought an end to fighting between the government and armed groups in the north. The fighting and instability has throttled a once-thriving tourism sector and driven away private investment. Despite the challenges, the economy grew around 5% a year during Keita's first term, but the benefits of that growth have not reached rural areas. Jonathan Sears is an assistant professor of international development studies at Menno Simons College in Winnipeg, Canada.
The economic gains will be and are concentrated. They're regionally concentrated. My sense also is that they're concentrated within, if not sort of a bureaucratic, you know, sort of government business class, you know, obviously connected to specific sectors in terms of export agriculture and the mining sector, energy, real estate, A. And then B, most Malians live in the south of the center, and so the gains really end up being concentrated in the opportunity areas that gather around Bamako, like Sikasso, like Kai in the west. There's a wide swath of people who aren't seeing those gains, who aren't seeing that growth.
Sears and other analysts say the public lacks confidence in the government's ability to provide security and improve living standards. Arthur Boutelis, a senior advisor with the International Peace Institute in New York, calls the problem a crisis between the governing class and the governed, the state and its citizens.
And I think that's the main challenge, overarching challenge, whether we're talking security, justice, basic services. The main challenge for the state and for the government and for the new president will be basically to try to restore some level of trust in the state. When I say restoring some level of trust, is basically demonstrating that the state can provide services to people.
Conditions on the ground make that goal difficult to meet. Some armed groups did not sign the 2015 peace accord, so fighting and insecurity continue in some parts of the country. Government forces have failed to prevent inter-community clashes in the central region and provide the security essential for reconciliation and economic growth.
The problem is they haven't been able to expand their presence and have actually faced setbacks. There's a national plan for the central Mali, right? And there's a support plan by the European Union as well for central Mali. The problem is, how do you implement those plans unless, you know, you have effective security forces that are also accepted by the local populations?
Efforts to improve security are part of the 2015 accords. All sides agreed to demobilize, and the rebels agreed to give up their weapons, and some would join Mali's military. Critics complain the government is dragging its feet. Officials blame the situation on continued violence by armed groups, a lack of cooperation by some separatist forces in the north, and by donors who have failed to live up to their pledges. Analysts also say, besides military issues, the government needs to tackle corruption and impunity. Richard Reeve is the official chief executive of the Oxford Research Group in London, an independent organization specializing in new approaches to security and peacebuilding. He calls for reform of the formal court system, which he says has been corrupted by political and economic elites.
Now, retraining is a possibility, but that takes a while. Bringing in less formal, less traditional judicial actors is a possibility. Working with the chiefs and traditional authorities to coordinate them with the statutory court system, or working with paralegals who are much easier to train than lawyers, than judges, than magistrates.
Reeve says more needs to be done to promote reconciliation between ethnic and community groups in the country's troubled central region. For this, he suggests increased participation, especially for youth and women, who make up over three-quarters of the population. He says Malian society is hierarchical, and those at the top are often not open to working with people below them. But adding other voices could make government more responsive and effective, promote reconciliation, and reduce the appeal of armed groups. I'm William Eagle in Washington.
Zimbabweans are waiting to learn the final outcome of the recent elections. Zimbabwe's Election Commission says incumbent Emmerson Mnangagwa of the ruling ZANU PF party won the presidency, but the opposition Movement for Democratic Change, led by Nelson Chamisa, is contesting the results in court. As Kudzai Zenawashi reports, the political uncertainty creates economic uncertainty too.
After the polls, Zimbabwe's political events turned violent when authorities fired live ammunition at unarmed civilians who were alleging the election was being stolen by ZANU-PF. Darlington Tsozo is a shop owner in Zimbabwe's capital, Harare.
When the economy is bad, business will also be affected. And when politics is not good, everything in the country gets affected. As retailers in this country, we already have been facing problems of shortage of foreign currencies.
Now that opposition MDC Alliance filed a court application on Friday last week contesting the July 30th results that made ZANU-PF presidential candidate Emmerson Mnangagwa the president-elect. That has created a political standoff that's affecting the country's economy. Christopher Mugaga is an economist and is the chief executive officer of Zimbabwe National Chamber of Commerce.
If you look at the current standoff, especially regarding the outcome of the 30 July election, certainly it's not doing well for business, causing a lot of discomfort and apprehension, especially from the business community.
He adds that Zimbabwe has often been haunted by contested elections in the past.
If you look at how Zimbabwe for the past 2 decades had somehow suffered due to contested elections, that alone can actually tell you the destabilizing effect that the election outcome, which is contested, is having.
Mugaga says accusations that the court system is not objective but favors the ruling party does not help the situation. If anything, the case could leave the reputation of the courts even more damaged than before. Eddie Cross is a senior member of the MDC Alliance and an economist.
I think the investment community around the world is standing by and watching what's happening. They're very disturbed, I think, by the violence. Businessmen need stability and they need continuity and they need peaceful conditions. And I think for many businessmen, all investment decisions are on hold until this situation clarifies.
Whoever wins, Cross adds political maturity is needed to unite the country, salvage the goodwill that existed after long-term ruler Robert Mugabe was removed from office, and move the country forward with a new government. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz, on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Twenty-three past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The World Health Organization says security issues could hamper efforts to contain an Ebola outbreak in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. In Uganda, politicians and human rights advocates are condemning treason charges against legislators. And Zimbabweans are still waiting to learn the final outcome of the recent elections. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Ugandan farmers are joining their counterparts in sub-Saharan Africa to develop a method of early detection of the fall armyworm, an invasive pest that originated in the Americas but since 2016 has devastated crops in Africa. A new mobile application, the Fall Armyworm Monitoring and Early Warning System, may help farmers defeat the destructive larvae, as Halima Tumani reports from Mukono, Uganda.
The fall armyworm has already caused billions of dollars worth of crop losses in Africa and could cause billions more if not stopped. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization and Uganda's Ministry of Agriculture says a new mobile application will help to eradicate the pest. Bahana John is a UN consultant on plants and pests. Farmers enter data that the app then uses to calculate infestation levels for appropriate action. Introduced in Madagascar and Zambia, the app is being rolled out across all of sub-Saharan Africa, where the fall armyworm has been found. Aonest Bongole lost half an acre of his 2017 crop to the invasive pest. He says, when the fall armyworm broke out, it took me a while to recognize it. By the time I knew it was the maize-destroying worm, my whole garden had been ruined. He says, from what I've learned here today and the trap we've been given to use, I hope to save crops compared to losing them as before. Stephen Biantwale Tibejuka is Uganda's commissioner for crop protection. The data farmers collect on the fall armyworm goes to a global web-based platform for analysis on ways to one day exterminate the invasive pest. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Mukono, Uganda.
And the recent plunge of Turkey's lira has rattled currency and commodity markets in much of the world. In South Africa, the rand today stood at 14.41 to the U.S. dollar, down 7% from 3 weeks ago. Oil prices, important to several African countries, including Nigeria, Libya, and Angola, today fell to about $66 a barrel, nearing a two-month low. Gold, another commodity extracted in many African nations, is down. It's trading around $1,185 an ounce, a price it last saw about 20 months ago. The jitters comes as other markets important to Africa already were weakening. Cocoa prices at about $2,140 per ton are down 29% since early May. And a worldwide oversupply has sent rubber down 42% since the start of the year to about $1.35 per kilogram. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News, coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Patrick Dea, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Counter. Tariffs and trade wars. Why does U.S. President Donald Trump favor tariffs on certain imports from both allies and adversaries alike? Do they help or hurt the U.S. economy? We'll ask our guests, Edward Gerwin of the Progressive Policy Institute and Robert Reinsch of the Center for Strategic and International Studies. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America. Stand up!